We often hear the term swing voter bandied about during election seasons. They're an elusive bunch that political candidates vie for, traditionally defined as voters who may not be affiliated with a particular party or who, depending on the issues, will vote across party lines. But there's one kind of swing voter our next guest says we don't often consider, and their decisions could make or break a candidate's chances. Ibram Kendi is the director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Institute at American University. He recently wrote about these swing voters for The Atlantic. Ibram, welcome.
Oh, it's great to be on the show.
Well, thanks for being here. Well, let's talk about this for a moment. When we think of swing voters, we tend to think of the kinds of people that I just described. But you're talking about another kind of swing voter. Tell us about them.
Yeah, sure. I think when most Americans and even most political campaigns think of a swing voter, they're thinking of someone who swings from voting Republican to Democrat or vice versa. They're thinking of, for instance, that Obama to Trump voter, that voter who voted for Obama in 2012 and Trump in 2016. This is the prototypical swing voter, and they're almost totally white. But I actually sort of wrote on what I call the other swing voter. And these are voters who are swinging between voting Democrat or not voting at all. And I'm distinguishing them from people who almost never vote. They're a specific group of people who look at Democratic candidates, who don't really even consider Republican candidates, and decide whether they're going to vote for that candidate, or they decide to vote third party. And this group of other swing voters are predominantly young people and even people of color, and especially young people of color. And they swung the 2016 election as much as these white swing voters who had voted for Obama and then Trump.
Let's talk about their significance. How big is this contingent? I mean, is it enough to tilt the election towards one side or another as we enter 2020, especially when you consider the makeup of the Electoral College?
Well, I think if you look, for instance, at the prototypical Obama to Trump voter, and many political analysts have talked about that they helped swing the 2016 election in favor of Trump, that was about 6 million voters. But 4.4 million Obama voters did not vote in 2016, and an additional 2.3 million Obama voters voted third party, which amounts to about 6.7 million voters, which actually are more than the number of people who voted for Obama and then Trump.
You focus in your article on the Democratic version of this swing voter. Does the same category of voter exist on the Republican side?
I think so. And so, in other words, you have people who consider the Republican candidate, and if they don't like the Republican candidate, they don't vote. And so they swing between voting Republican or not voting at all. And this is a sizable number of Americans, too. And just as it's critical for Republicans to focus on those swing voters, it's critical for Democrats to focus on the people who swing from voting Democrat to not voting at all.
I want to talk more about what that looks like, but I want to ask you about something else. You say that the Democrats have to combat the GOP voter depression and suppression. That is, choosing a candidate those swing voters can get excited about and preventing or rolling back voter suppression. From your view, is one of those more important than the other? Is it enough to just do one?
I think you have to do all of the above. And so when we look at, for instance, the prototypical other swing voter, again, the voter who's swinging from voting Democrat to not voting at all, or even third party, these are typically young Black voters. And then when we look at, for instance, who the Russians primarily targeted with trolling in the 2016 election, it was young Black voters. When you look at who is most subjected to voter suppression policies, it's typically young voters of color. And so what happens is, if you are a young voter of color and you're not excited about the Democratic candidate, it makes it that much harder for you to vote for them if you also have to overcome voter suppression and trolling on social media.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you bring up the Russian disinformation campaign. Even though we reported on their targeting of Black voters in particular, that seems to be something that we're not really focused on, that potentially foreign actors actually see exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, without question. I mean, they see these young Black voters as swing voters. And they recognize by their not voting or by their voting third party, they can swing elections. And they recognize that these young black voters may not be excited about a moderate candidate that has a difficult racial record. And they can then expose and manipulate them into not voting by information or even disinformation about that particular candidate. And that's what happened in 2016.
Let's talk a little bit about the debate tonight. What would it look like in practice for the candidates to center these swing voters?
Well, when you look at these young black voters or even young voters or even voters of color, you're talking about people who specifically overwhelmingly support, for instance, $12 minimum wage. You're talking about people who actually in 2016, young black voters, their two major sort of issues that they thought were that the country should be talking or be taking seriously were police brutality and racism. So you're talking about people who are very concerned about what the Democratic candidate is going to do to combat police brutality and racism. You're talking about people who generally support aggressive action against climate change. You're talking about people who generally have progressive ideas and want progressive policies.
Which of the candidates from your view has done the best job on this?
Well, I mean, the recent poll that came out, for instance, that sort of assessed black voters and what candidate they were most likely to be supporting. Of course, it was widely reported how, of course, Joe Biden was doing extremely well with every segment of black voters by large margins, except young black voters. That was the only sort of group of voters who he was behind in by double digits to Bernie Sanders. And so I think just like in the 2016 campaign, in which young black voters were supportive of Bernie Sanders, they seem to be very supportive of him as well. And again, these are swing voters, right? And so if they really like the candidate, they're more likely to vote than an older black voter who's more of a regular voter and is going to vote no matter the candidate.
I want to ask you about the importance placed on one demographic, specifically suburban white women. A lot of political analysts and pundits and pollsters, especially in 2018, have talked about the important role white women suburban voters played in the Democratic victories. But there is definitely history here. It's easy to centralize those voices, which often sometimes marginalizes the people that we're talking about, these young black swing voters. Do you see this as a damaging tactic? Is there a possible way for candidates to speak to them both?
I think there is a way for candidates to speak to them both. And I think part of my essay in The Atlantic was not only to get people to recognize the importance of these other swing voters, but also to think through why they are not recognized as important. Why are we constantly trying to standardize the white voter in the body politic? And what I mean by standardize, value them more than other voters. And it just so happens Americans have always done that. From the beginning of our republic, Americans have been standardizing and valuing white voters more than other groups, as opposed to seeking ways to value all voters equally, not only because we're committed to equity, but that's actually the way in which Democrats win.
The argument may be, though, that by focusing and centering those young swing voters that we're talking about, you might isolate the white vote. I'm just guessing that's the fear.
Well, actually, I'm working on a follow-up essay to this, to the first essay on the other swing voter. And it and I was studying some data that looked at those Obama to Trump voters who then voted Democrat in the 2018 midterm election. And it found that these voters, again, these, and they were almost totally white, these white swing voters who voted for Obama, then Trump, then Democrat in 2018, were overwhelmingly in support of Medicare for All. They were overwhelmingly in opposition to the Trump administration leaving the Paris Climate Agreement. They were overwhelmingly in support of $12 minimum wage. They were overwhelmingly in support of a millionaire's tax. And ironically, their sort of rates of support or opposition to those policies were very similar to the support or opposition of other swing voters, right? And so you're talking about liberal and young white voters who swung for Trump that are actually very winnable for Democrats by pushing forth policies and initiatives that will also win other swing voters.
That's Ibram Kendi. He's director of the Anti-Racist Research and Policy Institute at American University. He's the author of the book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. Ibram, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.